Good evening, everyone. Tonight's class was sponsored by the Karp family, Benjamin Karp. That was both the shir and the CD for the zchus of the neshama of Chana Leia Bas Chaim Leib and Ruvain ben Benjamin. Let this be a big schus for the neshama and the great, great aliyah. And just note, you haven't been seeing the CDs around the past few weeks. That is not because we stopped them. That's just because the machine has been overworked and isn't feeling too well. So it's in the healing process now. You can all pray for its complete refuah shleima. And hopefully within 2 to 3 weeks, they'll be back. Meanwhile, these classes that we're now will be put on CDs for backward order. If anybody will want them, you can. They'll be available over here. So the CDs will be made. You can also access the shir on Mayan Yisrael on our website. The website isn't really up yet, but the link is Mayan Yisrael at .com/shir. So if you, and that's accessible for 1 week after the shir. Then it disappears. Don't ask me why, but that's just the way it is. It's off. So, but eventually, as our new up-and-coming exciting website is going up, we will have all the past classes there for streaming and download, and let that happen to Mehera B'Yameinu very quickly. Now, this week, we have a double portion. We have, again, Parshas Bahar, Parshas Bechul Koisai, and this brings us to the conclusion of Sefer Vayikra. Now, there's so much to talk about. It's hard to decide on what you know, there's two parshas. But one of the interesting mitzvahs that we have in the parsha, in the first parsha, Parshas Bahar, is the Torah deals with, the Pasuk deals with, business dealings, business interactions, buying and selling and so forth. And selling homes and other property, real estate and movable property and so forth. In Pasuk Lamed Hey in Perek, what is it? Lamed Dalid, or Perek Hafei, no. Perek Chav Hei, the Pasuk tells us a mitzvah about helping each other out financially. The mitzvah of Gemilas Chesed. Gemilas Chesed is when to extend a loan to a needy person. So the verse says like this, Kiyamuch Achicha, when your fellow amongst you becomes needy, Umata Yodai, and his hand is wavering, Vechzakta Boy, you should hold on to him. And you shouldn't wait until the person needs tzedakah, until they require charity. Instead, you should help him out and put him on his feet by giving them a loan. B'chai achicha, b'chai imach. They should live with you, meaning you enable them to get back on their feet. However, when you're giving a loan, and you're doing this great mitzvah, which it says is even the bigger mitzvah than giving tzedakah. So, in the next pasuk, it says, however, there's a restriction. Al tikach me'itoy neshech v'tarbis. Don't take from your fellow interest. You should fear Hashem. And then it goes on, don't give your money with interest. Your food, do not give and expecting interest in return. And the verse concludes, Pasuk Lamed Ches, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your Hashem. Asher hitzeisi eschem e'eretz Mitzrayim, that has taken you out of Egypt. I have taken you out of Egypt in order to give you this land so that I can be for you for a God. So the Medrash seems to have a question, is bothered by this, that the verse concludes specifically in this mitzvah with Hashem's signature. I am God, your God, I took you out of Mitzrayim. We don't find that by all mitzvahs. Now, true, in the last few portions of the Torah that we read, there were many times that the Pasuk was saying, Ani Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your Hashem. So there was lots of mitzvahs. But again, every one requires an explanation. Why that mitzvah, not all of them? I mean, we know the mitzvahs are coming from Hashem. So why does it say, I am Hashem, your Hashem? And then it says, why does it particularly connect this mitzvah to the Exodus? I am Hashem who took you out from Egypt. Why is that important? Now, we do have other mitzvahs where it says that, let's say for instance, tzitzis. In the mitzvah to put tzitzis, which are the fringes that Yidden Jewish men wear, the tzitzis, it says over there too, Hani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your Hashem, Asher Etzeiseiachem Eretz Mitzrayim, I took you out of Egypt. We say it every day by the Kriya Shema. So it's rare that we have a mitzvah that is associated with specifically with the going out of Mitzrayim. And over here we have a mitzvah where Hashem explicitly states, I am your God, I have took you out of Mitzrayim. So the Medrash on Vayikra, called the Sifra, the Sifra says like this, makes a comment like this. Kol ha-mekabel olav oil ribis, if someone accepts upon himself the yoke of ribis, the yoke of this prohibition of refraining from interest, mekabel olav il shamayim, he accepts upon himself the yoke of heaven. V'chol ha-poyrik mimenu oil ribis, if someone unburdens himself from the yoke of this mitzvah, removes this mitzvah, meaning they engage in unlawful lending to another Jew and with interest. So then, ke'ilu, it's as if they have removed, parak mimenu ol shamayim, they have completely removed the yoke of heaven, completely severed their ties with the heavenly kingship. Seemingly the Medrash wants to explain why it says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God your God by this mitzvah. Saying, well, this is going to determine if I'm your God. If you keep to this law and you don't give your money with interest, then I am your God. But if you will give your money with interest, then I am not. Then you're saying that I'm not your God. And the Medrash continues. If someone concedes and agrees to this mitzvah, the mitzvah of ribus, of non-interest loaning, then this person agrees and admits to the yitzias mitzrayim, to the going out of Egypt. And anybody who denies the mitzvah of ribus, kilu kafar, it's as if they deny Yitzias Mitzrayim. So they're not believing in the Exodus. And again, explaining why over here it says, I took you out of Egypt. You accept this mitzvah, you're a believer, you believe in the core essence, the beginning of the Jewish people, that Hashem took us out of Egypt. The foundation of our faith. And if a person doesn't accept this mitzvah, they're not. Now, okay, we understand what the Medrash wants, but this itself needs a lot of comment. What is it about this mitzvah, particular mitzvah, refraining from borrowing or lending with interest, that is so great and so important, so essential to Judaism, that if one obeys this commandment, then it's considered as if they're doing all the mitzvahs. There's another statement in Chazal that if you keep this mitzvah, it's like considered as if they did all the mitzvahs. And if a person doesn't do the mitzvah, or or violates, transgress this prohibition. So this is a complete denial in Yetzias Mitzrayim, and this is shaking off their servitude, their submission to God, as if they have nothing with Him. What is it about the mitzvah? Now, we find something also very harsh that the sages say, that if a person is negligent in this mitzvah, or they outright engage in the loans and non-kosher loans, so then they will not be resurrected. The Tchias HaMeisim, which is the ultimate reward and the hope of all the Jewish people, as we say, Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek l'olam haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come. And according to most commentaries, the world to come means the resurrection. And the person who does this will not be resurrected. Why? What is it about this? More than any other mitzvah. A person doesn't keep kosher, it doesn't say that. A person engages in a non-kosher relationship, it doesn't say that. It's sinful. And whatever it is, they need to repair the damage. But it's not something so severe. Why is it Dafka this mitzvah? So there's a nice story told about the Rabbi Kiva Eger, one of the greatest Rabbanim. So Rabbi Kiva Eger lived in Posen, it's a city in, I think, in Germany. And there was a person there who would openly violate this commandment and loan and give money with interest. So Rabbi Yaakov Eger sent him many times and protested this, but he didn't obey. When this person passed away, he summoned the burial society, the Chevra Kaddish, and he told them that when the family comes to purchase a plot, a place for the caver for this person, they should charge an exuberant price for this person. Okay? They didn't tell them why. So when they came and they inquired about buying this grave, and they told them the price, and they became livid. They said, how dare, what's going on over here? Understand that there is inflation and so, but this is crazy. So they said, what do you want from us? This is what the rabbi said. So they went to the Rav. They came storming in and protesting, screaming, what's this? So he said to them, well, generally when a Jew is buried, so being that we believe in Tchias HaMeisim, the resurrection of the dead, so they're only leasing the property. How long? Short-term lease, because we expect it to be very soon. Every day we wait for Mashiach. Maybe a long-term, longer lease. But it's a short lease, so that's why the price is whatever it is. But someone who loans money with interest, the sages say, will not be resurrected. So then they're purchasing the land forever. How can you compare leasing to purchasing? It's a whole different price. There's no relationship at all. It isn't the same at all. I guess they needed that lesson. They needed to know that. But we need to understand the significance of this mitzvah. Why is that? How is that possible? Now, why the harshness by this mitzvah more than all the other prohibitions? Now Rashi gives some kind of explanation on the connection to Tzias Mitzrayim. Why by this mitzvah it says, I am God, your God, who took you out of Egypt. So Rashi says, because when a person might be tempted to charge interest on a loan, but they're ashamed, or it's a prohibition on the borrower too. The borrower isn't either allowed to borrow money from someone who's going to charge him interest. Or perhaps the court is going to try to stop him or something. So the person will, the Beis Din won't let him do it. So he will be deceptive. And he will claim that the money is not his money. That this money that he's giving out is money that has been invested with him by a Gentile. Jewish money, your money, you're not allowed to give, charging interest. But if you're receiving that money from someone, from a non-Jew, there's no prohibition like that. So you're just investing their money. Good investing. Investment is the bank, is banking. Giving the money as a loan and charging interest. So the person will claim, and even though it is his money, he will say that it's not his money, it belongs to others. And that he's only a broker. So Hashem says, I am God who took you out of Egypt. In Mitzrayim, I differentiated. I saw during the plague of the firstborn, at the moment of the redemption, I separated between the firstborn and those that weren't the firstborn. They were all living together. Who knows exactly who is a Bechor and who is not a Bechor? But you can't hide anything from me. So if you try to deceive me and tell me that it's someone else's money and it's not your money, I know. I know whose money it is. That's why I am God that took you out of Egypt. This is Rashi's explanation. However, the problem with it is that, again, it does explain some kind of a connection between this mitzvah and the Exodus and going out of Mitzrayim. But it's not the general mitzvah. It's only in a specific case. It's only when a person isn't being upfront with it. See, there are many people who might just violate the mitzvah and just say, listen, here, it's my money. I do with it as I wish. For that person, there is no connection to the Yetzias Mitzvah. It's only for those who are hiding it and trying to and engaging in the fraud and saying that it's not theirs. So it's not that common. More than that, it's a person who thinks that he can fool God. He can deceive Hashem. He's not doing it for others, people should accept him or they shouldn't protest against him or stop him from doing this. As Rashi says, he thinks that Hashem doesn't know. So this is a very extreme case. And to say that just because in this extreme case, that's the whole reason why it says, I took you out of Egypt. It's a little difficult. Secondly, this doesn't explain the first half of the Medrash, to saying that when you're accepting this mitzvah, it's as if you're accepting the servitude to Hashem. This is explaining the Hasheretzesi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim part, I took you out of Egypt, but it's not explaining the Ani Hashem Elokechem part. I took that I am God, your God, which is demonstrating that you belong, you're my servant, or the complete removal, or the rebellion against Hashem. This is not explained. Why? What is unique about the mitzvah of ribbis, of charging interest? Some commentaries want to explain, and they say, well, what prompts a person, what motivates a person to engage in interest loan? What is that? It's an easy way to make money. I mean, the biggest asset in making money is money. Those who have money can make money. Because money generates money. So if you have money, the easiest way, you don't even have to do anything. Person can go about doing his business, and their money is stimulating, generating revenue for them. It's a very tempting thing. So it's the concern for their livelihood and their ambition to make a lot of money that will get them to go ahead and give the money and charge interest. Well, that, however, shows on a lack of trust in Hashem. Because if you would trust in Hashem, you would realize that obeying His commandments cannot diminish or decrease your livelihood. Can't harm you in any way. So it's true in the short term, if you're going to loan the money to someone who needs it, a neighbor that's having a hard time, and needs the $5,000, and it can make a huge difference in his business. So you're not going to have that money, or that money's not going to generate any profits for you. But in the long term, Hashem will make your other businesses profitable, and you'll make far more money. So it's a lacking, it's a deficiency in the general trust, in the bitachon, and the trust of Hashem, that a person isn't trusting in Hashem. Now I'll understand why this is so essential. Because the person is questioning their very relationship. If you believe in God, and you trust in Him, just trust in Hashem, then you wouldn't violate this commandment. Violating this commandment is clearly demonstrating and saying that the person is not in a relationship or doesn't believe or have the trust in Hashem. Good explanation, but again, insufficient. Why is that? Because the sages are very careful in their words. They say if you are not careful with this mitzvah, then you're removing the yoke of heaven, which means the servitude, the submission to Hashem. According to this explanation, it has nothing to do with servitude. It's connected to trust. You're not believing, you're lacking in emunah. It's a different thing. Emunah, trust, is a different area than servitude. True, one leads into the other. Of course, if a person is in a deep relationship and he knows that his livelihood comes from Hashem and he is the exclusive source for his success, only from Hashem, of course, that will make the person more involved in mitzvahs to a much greater degree, because you feel your dependency on Hashem. But it's still a separate thing. There is trust and there is mitzvah observance. The Medrash says that this mitzvah determines the person's, the degree of the servitude, of their acceptance of the heavenly kingdom. So, and the other thing is that according to this, it's not the interest that they're giving, it's not the loan or the charging of the interest, the ribis that they're taking. It's the fact that they're not giving a free loan. That's not the point that they gave into a charged interest. It's that they're not helping others out and doing gemilas chassid. What would happen with a certain individual who is observant of the commandment and they will not violate this commandment or of charging interest, but as a result of that, they're not lending anybody any money because they don't want to waste their money, so they're going to use their money and then do it and invest it in other investments. So this person has not violated the commandment of ribis at all, but they're still not doing chesed and they're still displaying their same lack of trust. Here's the other Jew who needs the money. And you can help him, and you're not helping him. Why? Because you're worried for your own parnasa if you're going to help this person. It's the same thing. Then the Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your Hashem, should have been a clause. It should have been the conclusion of the verse that tells you to do the first pasuk, that tells you to loan your money, to give a loan to a person that's in need, to do gemilas chesed. Why is the mitzvah particularly connected, not, why is the mitzvah connected not to the loan, to the commandment of giving a loan, but particularly to the ribus element, to the charging of the interest? So to understand all of this, let's just examine one more thing. There is a way where a person could charge interest. And it's kosher interest, kosher profit from loaning money. And this is as follows. When you're lending your money to someone, what is the meaning of interest? The meaning of interest is that you're giving them the money and you're charging them a fee for using your money. That's the idea of interest. So, if you just technically reword it and redefine this interaction, you can set it up in a way that you're not charging them for the usage, but you're still getting a profit. It's sort of a way to sort of circumvent the mitzvah, or go around it. The sages came up with this brilliant idea. Why? Because they saw people are not giving loans. They would rather give loans to Gentiles, because in a Gentile, you have no prohibition of loaning money to a Gentile with interest. It's only to another Jew. So here they can make a profit, and to the Jew they won't make a profit, so they were rather banking or giving loans to non-Jews. So when the sages saw that, they said, well, we got to fix this problem because it's making it worse. Those that are needy and need a loan can't get a loan. So they came up and they said, well, we have a way of doing this. We're going to create this concept called Heter Iska. Heter Iska means the person who is giving the loan is becoming a partner in the business of the borrower. What does that mean? You're allowed to invest your money and be a partner in someone's business. And then you're allowed to earn money from that. You're just a partner. So you're not loaning the money, you're investing. So the way they orchestrate this is, again, this is very technical, and we're not going to get into it, it's just one element of it. And exactly, there is various different kinds of applications to this law. And that is something like this. The way the loan will take place is you give the money, the lender gives the money to the borrower, let's say they give them 10 grand as a loan. $5,000 is a loan, and that money, they're not getting back any profit. No percentage, nothing. They're getting it back, just the principal. I'm giving you 5,000, I'm getting back 5,000. The other 5,000, which is really a loan, we're not gonna call it a loan. The other $5,000 is me joining in your business. Whatever, you're gonna take this money and start a business with it, or invest it in something. So I'm joining with my $5,000 into your business. And now we're partners. If we make, and there's a profit. So that profit, you're gonna give me back, so you're gonna give me back the money. You're gonna give me back 10,000, five for the loan. Five is my principal that I invested in your business, plus whatever it is, the extra, the profit that has been made, whatever percentage they decided. That is the profit that he gets for that five, for that money. So I'm now a partner in this business venture. That's the idea. The only thing is, there's just one more technical element, is being that you're brokering, that the borrower is brokering or using or assisting the lender or being a broker for the lender in that other half, and they're doing this seemingly without a fee. Usually if someone gives you the money to invest it, you charge a fee. The fact that they're doing it without a fee, that would be considered interest, because they're doing them, because you loan me the money, you loan me this 5,000, I'm going to take care of your 5,000, right? I'm going to take, usually a person would charge a fee for investing someone else's money. But now I'm not going to charge a fee, I'm just going to do it for free. Why? Because you loan me money, so that's interest. I'm giving you something more than what I have. So that's why the sages said, no. There is borrower has to, the lender has to pay a fee to the borrower, which means he deducts some of the profit, and that's the fee for your being the investor on my part of it. That's the idea. Okay, this is the way they set it up. And today this is very, very common. In businesses that people do this, do we'll call it iska or a heter iska, and whatever the arrangements are, there are various different ways that it has to be arranged, that you can halachically charge interest. Now this is very problematic. Because here it seems like this is really just dancing around the law. I mean, who are we really fooling? This is all just about a loan. You're not seeking to be a partner in the other person's business. It's just that you want to give them a loan, but you can't give them the loan free because you don't want to do that. You don't want your money to be laying around without generating any profit. So you're just redefining it, and you're calling it this way, but who are we hacking and chining? This is not real. It's not true. It's not really what it is. But why? So even though the person is obedient and keeping to the letter of the law, but this is going against the spirit of the law. Why did the Torah tell us not to loan money with interest? So that it should cultivate our generosity and our kindness one to each other. And over here, what is the person doing? They're just finding a loophole. And who are the ones who instituted this? It was the sages. It makes the sages, as the sages seem to have been cheapening the mitzvah, lessening the whole thing, and making it also technical. And it's really not only about this mitzvah. We find it in many mitzvahs that the sages come along and they give us various different ways of sort of wiggling your way through the mitzvah. And many people get uncomfortable with Yiddishkeit because of that. And you see, it seems so superficial and so technical. The whole spirit, the neshama of the law is lacking. Why have the sages done this? so to appreciate and to understand the deeper significance. See, all this confusion and all this speculation comes when we learn and examine this mitzvah just on the literal level. But when we discover the inner root, the godly dimension of this mitzvah, the soul of the mitzvah, then we realize that not only have the sages not manipulated this commandment, but quite on the contrary, their twist on the mitzvah, or their input into this mitzvah and allowing the person to engage in this kind of borrowing, but in a manner that is technically okay, quite on the contrary, brings out the depth, the beauty, the true godliness and real significance of what the mitzvah really is. The awesome significance and meaning of this mitzvah. So to understand this, we know when we make a blessing on a mitzvah, whenever we're doing a mitzvah, we preface it with a blessing. And we say, Asher kidishanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, that Hashem has sanctified us with His mitzvahs, and He commanded us to do whichever mitzvah it is. He commanded us to put on laniach tefillin, to wear tefillin. Commanded us l'sa'ati patzitzis, to wrap in tzitzis. L'hadlik ner shel Shabbos, to light Shabbos candles. L'shmoa kol shofar, to hear the sound of the shofar. All the mitzvahs we're doing, we're saying Hashem sanctified the mitzvahs. And He commanded us whichever the mitzvah is. If you look carefully at the words, it seems to be repetitive. He sanctified us with His mitzvahs, v'tzivanu, and He commanded us. Well, you said that already. He sanctified you with the commandment. So why? He sanctified with the commandment, and He commanded. What would be wrong if it was asher kiddishanu, that He sanctified us, v'tzivanu, and He commanded us? Well, the sanctification, we understand, is through the commandment. Why say it twice? Now, again, it's not a very difficult question, because a simple answer. First, we're speaking in the general. We're thanking God for giving us all the mitzvahs. And now, after that, we're thanking for this specific mitzvah. And it's Ivanu, that He, from all the mitzvahs, He gave us this particular mitzvah. But if we examine it on a more mystical level, Asher kedishanu b'mitzvosav, that He sanctified us with the mitzvahs v'tzivanu, when He commanded us on this particular mitzvah. We're talking about two different mitzvahs. B'mitzvosav is referring to Hashem's mitzvah, God's mitzvah. V'tzivanu is referring to our mitzvah, our command. He sanctified us with, which means that the mitzvahs have two dimensions to it. There is the godly dimension of the mitzvah, which is Hashem doing the mitzvahs. Not that mitzvosa doesn't mean with His commandments to us. It means with His mitzvahs that He does for Himself. As the sages tell us, that all the mitzvahs that Hashem has given to us, He performs them Himself. Which means, it says, Hashem puts on tefillin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevaker cholim. Hashem visits the sick. So many places we find that Hashem studies Torah. It says the first 3 hours of the day, Hashem is studying Torah. So He commands us to study Torah, and He's also studying Torah. Hashem gives tzedakah. We say it in davening, Oseh tzedakos, He does tzedakah. Or in Bereishis it says that Hashem commanded Avram Avinu will command His children, Lishmar, to observe Derech Hashem, the way of Hashem, lastly tzedakah, to give tzedakah. Which means that Hashem gives tzedakah. And there's countless psukim and verses where it says openly that Hashem is giving tzedakah. As the verse says also, Magid devarav liYaakov, chukav v'mishpatav liYisrael. That Hashem tells His words to Yaakov, to the Jewish people, His statutes and His commandments liYisrael, to the Jewish people. What does that mean? That Hashem gives us His words, those very words that He utters, which is the words of the Torah, those words we're repeating it after Him. The very mitzvahs that He does, Hashem puts tefillin, Hashem gives tzedakah, chukav u'mishpatav. These are His mitzvahs. He commands us to do these mitzvahs. And that's the meaning. He sanctified us with His mitzvahs. These very rituals are godly rituals. These is godly activity. And He gave us the opportunity to do them too. However, the relationship between us and Him in the performance in the mitzvah is twofold. Works in two directions. The first element of it is, He does the mitzvah first, and then we do the mitzvah. As we said in the bracha, Shekedisha nu b'mitzvosav, first it's his mitzvah, and then the tzivah nu, He commands us, or as the words of the sages, mashahu oiseh, that which He does first, He commands others. So He is the one doing the mitzvah first, and then we're doing it after Him. That's one element. Second element is it works the opposite way. As a result of us doing the commandments, this causes God to reciprocate, and He does the mitzvah. Where do we find that we can trigger, and we can cause Hashem to do the mitzvah? Well, the sages say to us, "Kol ha'koyre v'shoynev." A person studies, reads Chumash, or studies Mishnah. Hakadosh Baruch Hu koyre v'shoynev kenegdo. That Hashem reads along with him. We have a chavrusa. Person might be thinking, "I'm up alone, I'm studying myself. No one is with me." No, you have a partner in study. Hashem sitting across you, and He's learning along with you. Whether it's Chumash, reading Chumash, or studying Mishnah, Talmud, whatever it is, Gemara, whatever it is, as we study, Hashem studies alone. And it's clear that the person is the one who initiates. And when we're studying, Kol HaKorei V'Shoneh, Hashem is the one doing it. So we need to understand, first of all, what's the difference? Why? What is the difference if Hashem does the mitzvah first and then we're doing it? Or the reciprocation of when we're doing the mitzvah, we're causing God to do this mitzvah? Number one. Number two, we need to understand, why is it necessary, the second thing. See, the first element that Hashem does the mitzvah, in power, and then we do the mitzvah, we can understand, because that's an enabler, or an empowerment. That gives us the ability to do the mitzvah. See, performance of mitzvah is many times difficult and hard, many obstacles and barriers. Doing of a mitzvah can require commitment, can require vigilance, can require selflessness. Sometimes quite difficult things for us to do. So when Hashem does the mitzvah, He generates a mitzvah vibe into the world. He creates a current of mitzvah energy, and it ripples throughout all the world till it comes over here, and it pushes us, it gives us that extra push that we need in order to be able to do the mitzvah. We find that even in human activity between man and fellow man, when people do something in the world, even if it's in one corner of the globe, it affects people on the other side. For instance, many times when there is a scientific breakthrough in medicine or in technology. So it's possible that, or many times it happens, that scientists who are in the other, on a different country, in a complete different place, will discover the same discovery a week later. Without any communication, without knowing about it at all. And why is that? Because once something has been stimulated, it already has been drawn down, it creates a flow, and that will have an effect. So this is when human beings do something. Can you imagine when Hashem does a mitzvah? What kind of empowerment, what kind of strength that generates, and it gives us the ability to overcome the laziness, the apathy, or whatever it is that we need. That's, however, the Hashem's performance of the mitzvah before we do it. But the question over here is, why does Hashem do the mitzvah, or what's the significance and meaning of Hashem doing the mitzvah together with us while we're doing it? Which means that He is impacted by the mitzvah where we're doing. We are stimulating Him into the mitzvah, into the performance of the mitzvah. Why? And more than that, not just why, but how. See, we understand that it's impossible that a finite, fickle, tiny little peepsqueaks like us can have an impact and on an infinite God. An infinite being that someone so infinitesimally small like us can have an effect on an infinite, on someone who's infinitely big. All of creation equals absolute zero in God's eyes. And here we're saying that when we're doing a mitzvah, Hashem is influenced and He's doing the mitzvah with us. Which means we are stimulating Him. The activities, our doings and our activities are His activities. Not we're copying Him, but He's copying us. He is dancing along with the human being. The shadow dances along. As the Baal Shem Tov says, Hashem Tzilcha, Hashem is your shadow. Whatever we do, that's what He does. So we understand, however, that that's not because our actions have inherently, essentially, impact on God. Can be. It's not because we could influence Him. It's because He has chosen to make Himself vulnerable to us. It was His will and His desire that He should be impacted and He should be influenced by our mitzvahs and by our activities. It was His will, it was His desire. But why? What's the gain? He did the mitzvah already. And by Him doing the mitzvah before, that has given us the power to do it. But why does He have to go along with our mitzvah by, in a sense, diminishing Himself, making Himself affected and impacted by human activity, by the earthy little movements of a mortal physical body? That doesn't make any sense. However, the question is, why is there in the first place, why does Hashem desire our Torah and mitzvahs in the first place? Our avodah, our service to Him. We know that Hashem created the world, why? So, in the philosophers and in the theological answer that is given, why did Hashem need the creation? Did He need the creation? God said, we didn't. He created the world because He's good and He wanted to do good to someone. Hashem created the world lehetiv. This is brought down in many philosophical works and Kabbalah works, the writings of the Arizal. Hashem created the world lehetiv lebruav, to do good to His creations. Before the world was created, there was no one to do good to. Created the world, so now there can be recipients, there can be beneficiaries of His goodness. But if that's the case, if Hashem created the world just to do good for us, so why couldn't He create us in the world to come? Create us in the world, in that blissful world where we enjoy Hashem's blessing. Why did Hashem put us in a world and demand of us our avodah, our service? Our work, our Torah and mitzvahs. And we will only get the reward, we will only come to the world to come and receive all that blessing and all that delight in accordance to what we've accomplished in this world, in accordance of how well we did in Torah and mitzvahs. Like we see in the second portion of this week, in Bechukoisai Talechu, if you're going to go in my statues, you're going to follow my mitzvahs, then I'm going to reward you. I'm going to give you rain, I'm going to give you this, I'm going to give you parnasa. Why? By doing that, many people will not, or there are those who do make it, those who do well, and those who don't do so well. So if all He wants is to do good, and to give, and to give, and to give, why put us in a situation with an evil inclination, with all the difficulties, where we find many people fail, or we fail many times? And instead of just putting us in Gan Eden, in that beautiful world, and giving us all the blessings for free. The explanation is that when you give something to someone, even if that which you're giving them is very good, but if you're giving it to them and they didn't earn it, they didn't achieve it, it didn't come through their work and it didn't come through their toil, then they're uncomfortable with it. That's called nahama d'chsufa. It's called bashful bread. A poor man doesn't look in the eyes of the donor because he feels uncomfortable. He feels like a nebuch. I'm not giving anything to you, but you're giving to me. Hashem does not want us to feel uncomfortable. When you want to help someone out, you see someone is in need, they just don't have a job. You can do two things. You can help them in two ways. One way is you can go and give them $100 or so, whatever it is that you want to give this poor person. Or you can go and hire them and give them a job. And you don't have a job, you'll find a job. Figure something out. And you might think, well, if I gave them the money for free, I didn't do much bigger favor. I'm not even asking anything in return. But if I hire this person, then it's far less of a favor. Because now he has to work and work for the money. But in truth, it's the opposite. Because when you're giving them the donation, that's so they're not comfortable with what you're giving them. But if you're giving them a job and they feel good, so they feel they've earned their money. So it's feels much better. Hashem, being that he's the ultimate good, not only did he want to give us good, but he wanted to give us good in the best way possible. That we should be able to feel that we have given God something. We have worked, we have earned it. And for that reason, he set up the system that we're going to work in Torah, we're going to learn Torah, do the mitzvahs, and it will be challenging and it will be difficult. So we will really feel that this is something that we've earned. This is our profit. And that's why it's the ultimate good. So if we take this a step further, if you go ahead and you hire this person, but you don't really have a job for them, you have nothing for them to do, but you really want to do them a favor and make them feel good in the money that you're giving them. So you bring them into their backyard and you give them a shovel and a spade and you tell them, dig a hole, a big hole, a gigantic hole. Huh? And then they say, and then what? Say, and then you can fill the hole. Say, and then what? And that's it. Take a long time to do that. I'm paying you $20 an hour for making this hole and filling it. So we can understand that doesn't really work. Even though they're working for their money, but it's not the work that they want. They want to feel that they've done something for you. When they know that this is meaningless, what have they done? They dug a hole and they filled it back up with the earth and done nothing. So what have they given you? So they can sense that you're just doing them a favor to make them feel good. So there isn't the real kindness. The real kindness is when you're giving something for the person to do that is really meaningful to you. Something important. That's a real favor. That's a real kindness. So Hashem with us is the same thing. By Hashem giving us mitzvahs, and Hashem telling us, you know what, I created a messy world. There's a big mess over there. You need to tidy up the world. You should fix it up. And we say, and then what? Yeah, make it into a nice place. And then what? What does that mean to you? Hashem says nothing. Because the world is meaningless to me. And everything that happens over here is nothing. It's just one mud pile. Why should I care about it? But I want you to work. So here's your work to do. So then, what have we given him? So even if he gives us the greatest bliss and the greatest reward in the world to come, we feel very uncomfortable with it because he did us a favor. However, when Hashem connects himself to our mitzvahs, bonds with us, and he says that when you're doing a mitzvah, you are causing a flow in the divine circuits. You're causing a godly flow of energy. You're causing an expansion of godliness. You're channeling my light. You're making me. You're revealing my kindness. You're causing me to be kind. You're generating my generosity. You're impacting me. You're studying Torah, I'm studying Torah too. In a sense, I am acquiring knowledge as you're acquiring knowledge. So when Mashiach comes, and we're going to be brought into the world to come, and we can face Hashem, and Hashem can say, thank you, you made me feel so good, and here is what I am giving back to you. And it's not, and it won't be, it's not just something he says, it really, really is true. He made himself, he wired himself to us. We're the ones who can cause the heavenly flow, or God forbid, cause the stopping of it. All depending on our actions. He said earlier, he made himself vulnerable to our performance of mitzvahs. So that out of his utter goodness, so that we can really feel that we're doing something, and we're really doing something for him. That's the first element of it. In order that it shouldn't be shameful bread, but there is another element. And that is, by knowing that what we do has godly significance, has divinely repercussions, divine repercussions, supernal ramifications, cosmic effects. When a person knows that he is doing that, so then that which they're doing is done with alacrity, with life, with energy, with excitement. If you're doing something and you don't really feel, and you don't see what it is accomplishment, what it is accomplishing, even if you're getting paid, and even if the salary is high, you don't really, you don't have, it's not only when you get paid you feel uncomfortable with it, while you're doing it, it feels like nothing. There is a story of a you know, in the days when they would have the pirates, the noblemen, the landowners who owned land. So there was this nobleman, who was, he had the, and he had many of the serfs who would work for them. So he had this nobleman who was sitting in his palace, or in his mansion, he was looking out, and he was watching his workers, the peasants. He had wheat fields. And he was watching one of the peasants cutting wheat. He was watching them all, but one of them captured his eye. He noticed that this person, when he picks up the sickle to cut the grain, he has such a graceful swing. When he swings the sickle down, it's so elegant and graceful. And it was very pleasing to the eye. And he was mesmerized by it. And he's watching, and he's watching. Couldn't take his eyes off. And the next day he goes back, and he's watching him again. And he says, well, that's great. Then he realizes how much time he's wasting. He's sitting there, looking out the window. He says, you know, why don't I just call him and he'll do the same thing in my study. So he calls the guy in and he says to him, you know, I have a deal for you. How much are you getting paid for your work? So the guy said, I get 5 ruble a week for the work that I do. He said, okay, you know what? I'm going to pay you 20 ruble. You're going to stand in my study with the sickle and you're just going to swing it again and again like you're cutting the wheat. So he said, but yeah, but what am I cutting? He said, nothing, just do it. You're very graceful and it's very nice. I enjoy watching you. So you can be over here. So he says, great, that's wonderful. You mean I can get paid 4 times as much and I don't have to stand in the scorching heat and indoors, and the swinging is much easier because if there's no resistance, you're not cutting anything, so it's lighter. It's swinging the ear, so it's a fantastic deal. After 2 days, this guy came back and he said he's resigning. He says, "Please do me a favor, put me back to my old job." I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "Nothing is happening. I'm not doing anything. There is no productivity. A person can't work when he doesn't see the productivity of his actions. Nothing is happening. When we know that when we're doing a mitzvah, something is really happening. Something awesome is happening. When we're giving tzedakah, it's not just a human act. It's not just, you say, okay, I'm giving $1,000. $1,000, even it's a lot of money. Whatever tzedakah person gives, give a nickel, give a dime, give $10, but even if someone gave a large amount of money, $1,000, good, it will go a far way. It will feed a hungry family for 2 or 3 weeks. A major contribution, that should make you feel good. But if there is a consideration and the understanding, that when I am giving tzedakah, when I put that nickel into the tzedakah box or help that poor lady by giving her $2, $3 or $5, at that moment, this is causing God to give tzedakah. And what does it mean that Hashem gives tzedakah? What does it mean that Hashem gives tzedakah? Who is Hashem giving? We give tzedakah, Hashem is giving tzedakah. So it says like this. The word, what does tzedakah mean? Tzedakah means you're giving to the one who doesn't have. You have a needy person, he doesn't have, and you're giving him. So when a person, when, to Hashem, all the, this world and all the worlds are all considered impoverished. They don't have. Because the worlds don't have any energy, they have no life, they have nothing on their own. So it's not only our physical world, it's the spiritual worlds with myriads and myriads of angels. Now, as we know in Kabbalah, it says how there is trillions and trillions of levels, higher and higher, worlds of celestial beings and souls. And this goes just endlessly on and on. And when a person is giving tzedakah, one nickel, as you give that tzedakah, this is causing a simultaneous effect that God at that moment is giving tzedakah. And what does that mean? He's imbuing all of creation with life. He is giving to the needy, which is all of existence. Everybody is receiving their sustenance. You're influencing all of the world, not just down here, but in all the heavens above. This is having infinite impact. That's powerful. That can get us over our perhaps miserly and cheap feeling. We're not in the mood. But when we realize that the little thing that we can do has such effect. The Baal Shem Tov says, when you give tzedakah, you're causing Hashem's name. As we said, it's opening a godly flow. So the Baal Shem Tov says like this, the coin, that's a yud. It's a point. It's the yud of Hashem's name. When you take the coin in your hand, the hand, the palm, is the hay. Why? Because it has five fingers. Also, a hay is an expansion of the dot. The yud is a dot. The hay is the vertical and horizontal expansion, creating a space from that yud. The hand is the palm is the space of the hay. So now there is the hay. When you stretch your hand out, so now there is the vav of Hashem's name. The recipient, the poor person, or the poor man, or the poor woman who's sticking out their hand, their palm is the latter hay of God's name. Right now, something awesomely divine has happened. The channel of Yud Kei Vav Kei took place in this giving of tzedakah. That's exciting. And the same as other Bayadim mitzvahs, going to visit the sick. What does it mean that God visits the sick? Who are the sick that Hashem visits? In Shir HaShirim it says, Samchuni ba'ashushis. He has surrounded me, has supported me with good wine. Refiduni ba'tapuchim, he has encircled me with apples. Ki choyla sahava oni, because I am sick with love. When a person wants something desperately, deeply, they have a quest, they have a thirst, a desire, but it's something that they can never reach and they can't have. That can make them sick. That can make them ill. The Gemara tells a story of someone that wanted something very desperately and they became ill. Wanted something that wasn't kosher. That can cause an illness. The worlds, all of the worlds, down here we don't feel it. But in the upper realms, the angels above are longing. The souls are thirsting. They're reaching out, they recognize that which Hashem, the little deposit that God has made into creation to create the world, is so infinitesimally small, it's so nothing. And they're yearning to touch, to reach out, to connect to the infinite, to what is truly real. And that creates a fever, a temperature. There is an illness. It's a cosmic fever. What does it mean Hashem comes to visit the sick? Hashem comes to visit the sick means He quenches the thirst of the world. He appears into the creation, giving them some more of His light, giving them the apples and the wine, which means the wine represents the Torah, the mystical elements of the Torah. The apples are the light of the mitzvahs. That's what it means. Hashem visits the sick. The whole world is considered sick. All of the universe, Hashem relieves that illness by coming into the world and quenching the thirst, taking away that illness. So the next time a person knows that there is you have a very busy day, but there's an old man who's in the hospital, and you're just not in the mood, and you think maybe I'll go tomorrow, and you need the extra motivation. And you realize that when you walk into that hospital room and say hello, even if you're there just for 5 minutes, you're causing the temperature of all of creation to go down, because God has now become intimately revealed and present in the creation. How empowering, how amazing that is. So that is Hashem's performance of the mitzvah. That's why he does it. He does it that we can feel how the mitzvah is important to him, and that our mitzvahs are actually causing something of above. Now this is true about every mitzvah. Every mitzvah has this thing that when we do something, it causes a godly effect. But here, it's the mitzvah of ribbis, of obeying the commandment of not giving interest, which represents this very notion itself, that God is a partner and involved in the mitzvahs that we do. Meaning, every mitzvah represents some aspect of Hashem's involvement in our life. We said earlier, when you give tzedakah, you're causing Hashem's right hand to be imbued with life, which means Hashem is giving chesed, kindness, which is his right hand. You're doing a different kind of a mitzvah. You're studying Torah, you're illuminating Hashem's mind. So there are the details. But the very force, the very idea that Hashem should connect himself and be part of our mitzvah observance, that's the spiritual content of the mitzvah of ribus, of not giving interest. Why is that? Because we mentioned earlier, when you're giving interest, what are you doing? What is a person doing? Giving your money, and your money is going to generate profit, even though the money isn't yours anymore. You see, when you give money to someone, what's happening? On a loan. The money is now theirs. The money is not yours. It's their money. It's only that now they have an obligation to pay you back. But it's there. They can do whatever they want. That one day, whenever the loan is up, they have to pay back that loan. So then, if it's not your money, why are you taking profits from it? And the answer is, you're charging them because the money was once yours. It's not yours now, but since I was the one who gave it to you in the past, that's why I am charging you now for that profit. I'm demanding pay for something I've done in the past. What did we say before? What is the other way of doing this mitzvah, of giving? What's the kosher way of loaning money? When you become a partner with it. What does a partner with that mean? It's not that you're giving something to someone and then you're charging for something that was once yours. No, you're giving them the money and you're explicitly saying, this money is still mine. Which means I'm a partner in your venture. I'm involved in what you're doing. I'm there with you. You might not see me physically, but I'm a partner in this business. And that's the profit that I'm going to earn, is because I'm with you. I'm not detached from it. It's not from something that I had in the past. It's from something that I have now, because I'm involved. Hashem is the ultimate lender. He lends, we're the borrowers. Everything we have is borrowed from him. Our body, our soul, our strengths, our talents, everything he has given to us. He's giving us a loan. What does he want us to do with it? To make profit. We're to make business with it. What's the business? Well, Torah and mitzvahs, that's the business. That's the profit that we generate. However, there's two ways that Hashem can be involved. One way he can be involved is, I am giving you the ability to do the mitzvah. I'm doing the mitzvahs first. I gave you the ability, and now you do it as a human being. You as a mortal human being, now you do the mitzvahs. You use your strength and do the mitzvah. Fine. It's our observance. It's our performance. It's all that it is. Another way is, no. He adds a divine touch. When we do the mitzvah, he is imbued. He's enveloped in our hands. He's enveloped in our feet. He's enveloped in our brain and our mouth when we study Torah. He's there and involved within us. And therefore everything we do is godly, is infinite. What does it depend on? Well, if a person charges interest, what is he saying? He's saying, here, I'm not a partner with you. I'm giving you the money, and I'm charging you for something that I've once, the money was once mine, and therefore, because I was the one who gave it to you, you owe me interest for that. Hashem says the same thing to the person. You know what? I gave you everything. Now you're on your own. Whatever you're doing, I'm not a partner. I just expect something in return for what I've given you. But I'm not involved right now. But when the person doesn't charge interest, doesn't charge interest, instead, they become a partner, as the sages say. You could do business. You could. But become a partner with it, being engaged and involved in that mitzvah. So God says the same thing. I am now involved in every mitzvah that you're doing. The business that you're doing, which is the Torah and mitzvahs, involves me too. I'm with you. I am dancing with you in your mitzvahs that you're doing. I'm a partner in that mitzvah. That's the reason why this mitzvah is so essential for all the other mitzvahs. This is the mitzvah that makes all the mitzvahs godly. Without this mitzvah, the mitzvahs, all the other mitzvahs, are lacking life. And that's also the reason why the resurrection, someone who doesn't keep this mitzvah, will not, God forbid, is not resurrected. And the reason is like this. Why is the ultimate reward the resurrection? Why is the resurrection the greatest? Why couldn't it be anything else? Why does Hashem reward us with the resurrection? And the answer is midah keneged midah, measure for measure. What? It's the reward that we get for a mitzvah is a direct consequence of what we're doing. What are we doing in this world all day long? Well, you know what we're doing in this world? We're resurrecting dead things. We walk around all day long resurrecting things, giving them life. Because the creation, this world, the materials of this world, are finite entities that God created, and that's all they are. They're limited entities, limited beings. They're not Hashem. If they're not Hashem, then they have a temporary existence, a finite existence. That means that they decay, and ultimately, after a while, what happens to everything? It disintegrates. Now, something that will disintegrate in the future is considered dead even when it exists, because it doesn't have a real existence. Something that evaporates. So everything in this world is considered dead because it doesn't have true existence. When a Jew does a mitzvah, they're touching that object with a spark of God. They're connecting Hashem. They're using this object as an instrument for a godly will. So they're now eternalizing a temporary thing. They're giving it life. They're resurrecting the physical objects with which they come into contact with and doing the mitzvahs. As a result of doing that, the reward to them is that they too are taken from a temporary existence, from a mortal, limited existence, and we become eternal, existing forever. Because we resurrected things, we become resurrected. What's our power to resurrect? Our power to resurrect is only if God is imbued in our mitzvahs. If Hashem is not imbued in the mitzvahs, and if it's only our doings, which comes as a result of a person charging interest, he says that I want something for what I've given you, but I'm not involved, I don't continue to be involved in your business, in your enterprise, then what? Then Hashem is not there. And if Hashem is not there, then we are finite, and then we're not giving life to dead things. And if we're not giving life to dead things, there is no Tchias Hamis. And that is the reason also why we said in the beginning, if you accept this mitzvah, you're accepting all the mitzvahs. Oil, and it says the servitude of all the mitzvahs, because you're causing, in this mitzvah, the person is causing Hashem's involvement in our mitzvah observance. And also the connection to the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because going out of Egypt means going out of all limitations and all boundaries. We are limited. Even if we grow, even if we become so smart, even if we learn and we study and we become so good, after all, we still live in boundaries. There are certain boundaries that we can't break, and that is the inherent element that we are creations. We can't go out of that. We're stuck in being who we are. There's only one way that we can go out of all limitations and all boundaries is if we link up with God, because then we're not we, then we're Him. We and Him are one. So by this mitzvah, which invites Hashem into your existence as a partner, your actions are not yours, you go out of Egypt. Dafken, this mitzvah takes that energy. All this leads us to two conclusions, just want to say quickly. And that is conclusion number one. We should never ever tell our children that Hashem doesn't need their mitzvahs, and you're just doing it for yourself. Everybody, people are always saying that. Oh, you think Hashem needs what I'm doing? He's doing it for us so that we should gain, we should be doing for our own good. Right? And then what? And then children say, well, you know what? I also know what's good for me. Don't tell me what's good. You have to tell your children that Hashem is impacted. He needs your mitzvah, not just wants it, He needs it. Not because He essentially needs it, it's because He willed Himself a need. And now He's needy for your mitzvah.
mitzvahs. You can make Hashem's day by doing a mitzvah. That's very important. And secondly, we should never think that what the sages figured out a twist on a mitzvah, that they were playing with the mitzvahs and manipulating the mitzvahs. Any kind of thing that seems to be superficial to us is not superficial. It's this very notion of heter iska that reveals the whole depth of this mitzvah. Giving your money but being a partner with it brings out what the mitzvah really is all about. The true godliness, the true infinite truth of what the mitzvah is. And that is true about everything. And if we don't see it, the problem is in us, not chas v'shalom, in the sages and in the chachamim. What they said is real and eternal.